are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, September the 4th, and another strange and crazy week of NBA basketball. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today is Friday, so you know what that means at this point. It is Fridays with Brian. We're going to say goodbye to the departed teams from the bubble in the NBA playoffs and also talk about round two, the unfiltered discussion that Brian and I have on Fridays, the older brother, Brian Shook. But give me a follow on Twitter at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that, also Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook, but let's bring him in. Brian, older brother, what is happening? How was your week?
Wasn't bad. Little low-key this week. Went out one night and hit it a little hard for my age, so was a little low-key the last couple days. So it was pretty stress-free week. What about yours?
Yeah, at least I guess the good news is that option is available now. It's a little bit better than it was in the spring and the summer that you can make bad decisions. I made some bad decisions on a Tuesday myself this week, turned it into a little bit longer week than maybe one would hope. But let me ask you this, Brian. I don't know if you're even aware, but the Kentucky Derby is this coming up this Saturday. It was moved from obviously the first weekend in May, as it always is, but from the pandemic was moved over to this weekend. Are you a horse guy? And do you have a horse? Is it even on your radar at all?
It's really not on my radar. I happened to hear that it was this weekend just a couple of days ago, so I didn't know that, but I haven't looked anything into it. It's never been something that I've been overly interested in. Having worked in restaurants, it's the day we make some mint juleps, maybe, as people come in to watch the races. But no, it's not really been anything that I've gotten into, unless a horse wins one or two of them. Then that third race is obviously something that everybody kind of gets into.
Yeah, Tis the Law did win the Belmont. So that was usually the Kentucky Derby is the first one, but since the Belmont was the one that wasn't pushed back, that was the first one. So now the Kentucky Derby is the second one this year. And let me be a company man and pass along that. Go to PlayMichigan.com. We've got your Derby primer, and also you can sign up. This is the first year that legal regulated betting can happen from your couch, from home, inside the state of Michigan. The operator right now that is licensed and legal is called TVG, and we got a nice promo code available there. Check it out, playmichigan.com, sign up for TVG. Bet on whoever you want to bet on. We got a $300 risk-free bet for your first bet. So I'll drop that now. I know you guys are coming here to listen to my horse rants for Locked On Pistons.
Let me ask you, what is your best Kentucky Derby or horse racing story, if you've got any?
Oh, it's just parties and dressing up and stuff like that. I've actually never been to the Derby. I had a buddy who lived in Louisville for a while, and it was like, oh, one of these years I'm going down there. And I know we got a lot of younger listeners. If you ever have thoughts like that where it's like, oh, I got a buddy in Louisville, one of these years I'm going to go down there. I got a buddy who lives out in near the Rose Bowl, one of these years I'm going to go out there. Do that thing, because that buddy is going to like leave, or you're going to have life circumstances where you can't do it the next year. Don't like say maybe in these next 3 or 4 years I'm going to go do that thing. So I did go to the Belmont one year. That's my one good story. Our buddy Matt Atami got married, and his bachelor party was in New York City that weekend, and we did not pre-plan the fact that we were going to go to the Belmont, but it was just kind of happenstance. It was the same weekend. So we all headed out to the Belmont, had a great time. And so I guess that's my story. It's a little, you know, we were in like our 30s, so it wasn't like it was the craziest bachelor party of all time. So a little bit anticlimactic on the story there. But yeah, I did go to the Belmont one time.
Well, it sounds enjoyable. Would the Derby be pretty high on your list for sporting events that you would most want to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been to quite a bit. I've been to NBA Finals games and all that stuff. So, yeah, the Derby I've never been there. I've never even been to Churchill Downs. would love to check that one out. But let's talk about hoops here. It's been a wild last couple days. We're taping this as the Clippers are taking care of business against the Denver Nuggets in game one. And obviously at this point we could pretty much declare that the Clippers are up 1-0 in that game. I think they're up by like 24 midway through the fourth quarter here. But the referee issues on Wednesday night, if you want to call it that, couple of game sevens on Tuesday and Wednesday, the crazy OG Anunoby shot on Thursday night. I guess, Brian, what do you think? I mean, what's the biggest takeaway from all this? I mean, I gave my takes yesterday that, Bogdanovich probably changes that Utah series, that I kind of think the refs got things right. I know that Twitter blew up and went crazy about how unsatisfying, and I agree with the unsatisfying part, but where are you at with these last few days?
Absolutely, on the referee topic, I do agree with you. We bring in technology to put a microscope on these guys, and then we ask them to interpret the rules differently based on the time or situation of the game. And I think that's just as unfair as we can do it. Those were fouls. They have to call it by what they're going to be graded by. So we can't demand perfection from them and then be mad when they give it to us.
Yeah, Chris Paul, though. Let's talk about Chris Paul for a second, because you're someone who's been a little bit critical of Chris Paul, more so than the average fan. And I'm with you for the most part. I'm kind of an anti-Chris Paul guy compared to maybe the average NBA fan, too. But he was outstanding during this series. But again, they lose in the first round. He's out in game seven. Did your perception of Chris Paul change at all this week or these last couple of weeks?
No, there's nothing to say that it could change. He had a great season. He's had great seasons in his career. He's had great playoff series. I know in his history, either an injury from him or an injury from key components on some teams that he's had have seemed to jump up and bite him more often than maybe some other players. But for a decade and a half, 2 decades almost, I've heard that he's the best point guard of a generation, and he can't get to a conference finals. Mm-hmm. Now, that may speak to point guards or, position basketball becoming less and less important as we move on, actually. So maybe specialized positions like that, maybe that's what that's kind of demonstrating. But he looks everything like a prototypical point guard that you'd build. But the results just aren't there. And I think that ultimately, when you've been a leader of some very talented teams through the years, that you need to put up better results.
Yeah, it would be nice if he had that one year that he could point to. I know he had a Game 7 win against San Antonio back in the day, which was nice because that was still when the Spurs were going pretty well. But the fact of the matter is he signed that huge contract, good for him, and it's very convenient that the head of the Players Association figured out a way for him to get $40 million per year for his contract. But so universally regarded as such a bad contract that he got dumped on Oklahoma City and Houston had to give up some picks to get rid of him for another bad contract in Russell Westbrook. So despite the fact that he had, like you said, a great season, a very good season for Oklahoma City, was the consummate professional, was the leader of a young team, and probably got the most out of that Oklahoma City that one leader and one best player on that team could have gotten. At this point in his career, he's not a guy who's going to be the number one player on a team that has serious championship aspirations. I mentioned on Thursday's show, Philly and Milwaukee. Now, obviously, Milwaukee, we'll see what happens with them over these next few weeks. But do you have a destination? Do you have like an idea of like for him, this Chris Paul and Sam Presti thinking about their offseason, thinking about the fact that obviously this is a gigantic contract. I think it's 2 years, $85 million left on this deal. Do you have a team in mind or a situation that you think might work for Chris Paul and the team collecting him?
That's a tough question. That's a big amount of money for them to unload. I think one of the destinations that might be a possibility would actually be Detroit, wouldn't it?
Like, absolutely.
That's kind of been bounced around, and I don't know that it'd be the best move for the franchise, but it'd be certainly interesting and maybe bring some legitimacy to the squad in the Eastern Conference. So I wouldn't be necessarily against it. I mean, obviously, you'd have to see the components of how that would actually work for me to give a an in-depth thought on it, but I wouldn't necessarily be against it if it worked into the timing and the plans that the franchise could demonstrate by taking clear paths on a direction that they were going. And I don't think necessarily something that gigantic is going to be in the plans right now. It doesn't seem like. Where do you think he ends up next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see what happens with Milwaukee. Like, if they fizzle out and lose in five to Miami or something like that, then maybe they do need to make big changes. And obviously, this is a team that had so much success over the last two regular seasons that it's hard to say that this is a team that's in disarray. But obviously, we know the regular season and the postseason are two different things. So, yeah, I can see where Milwaukee kind of makes a lot of sense, especially because the weak link at times – in the postseason has been Eric Bledsoe, and he's nowhere near the big contract number that's going to get you Chris Paul. But if you kind of have him as a baseline and you say Bledsoe, you keep throwing contract on a contract on a contract to make those numbers work, and you figure out a way to get Middleton and Giannis and Chris Paul together, maybe that can work out. Now, that's a little bit of an extreme example. Philadelphia makes more sense in terms of the contract because you could have Al Horford as a real anchor to that kind of deal. But does Philadelphia have enough assets to make up for that fact? Chris Paul is really interesting because it's like one of the more high paid players in the NBA, certainly not one of the top 5 or 10 players in the NBA right now, but he's kind of in that Blake Griffin range, right? Where it's like, if he's healthy and he's going, you can make a case that he's the 15th or 23rd best player in the NBA, but you're also taking a big risk and a big swing on contracts for guys that, you know, there's no world where Chris Paul's worth $41 million per year. There's no world where Blake Griffin's worth $39 million a year. Just the salary structure has us in this weird place with guys like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes it more difficult to do stuff, and probably for the better part of it, you know, for the best. If you're going to make a financial commitment to a guy that's that big, then you better honor it all the way throughout. So I can understand that. So I think ultimately we'll see if he stays or is able to find a good situation that he can take one more shot at. I'm rooting for the guy. I don't say I might necessarily like him, but I think he certainly deserves a bigger chapter in the history of the NBA than I think he's going to get if he doesn't get at least a deep playoff run or some signature postseason moment that people can point to and say that's why he was the best point guard of a generation.
Yeah, you wonder if like his legacy will ultimately be super important kind of like off the court, right? As the Players Association president and a guy that was in the mix, like we think about the Banana Boat, right? Chris Paul and Carmelo and Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, and obviously LeBron James rises above all those guys in terms of his significance historically, but it's almost like behind the shadows, like Chris Paul has been this guy who's been super important around the league. Everyone in league circles respects him and appreciates him, and the same reasons that he is that guy that's respected is maybe what makes him a difficult teammate in some ways, the hard-headedness, the huge personality, and just the orneriness or something, whatever it is. But he's an interesting case study, and I appreciated the fact that he went toe-to-toe with two superstars and a team in Houston that is probably a little bit more prepared for today's NBA, and really taking a team like Oklahoma City, looking around and at the talent that he had on that roster and lack thereof, comparatively speaking, to some of these other teams in the playoffs, and to drag those guys to a seventh game. I'm going to give a big salute to Chris Paul there. But like you said, at the end of the day, he's going home in the first round of the playoffs. But let's talk about the second round a little bit and get into it here next. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, talking about erectile dysfunction is not easy. Usually we just brush it off and blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it, but the real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to get the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with a free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA.
Yes, sir!
All right, just a reminder to get your – go on the Pistons subreddit and check out the topic that I made up about the top seven big board. You can get it to us this weekend. Who do you think the Pistons should draft in the top seven? Or you could reach out to me on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that. All sorts of responses coming in from you guys, and we'll do the Pistons fans big board next week. So reach out to us there. But we're here with Fridays with Brian Schoch here, and a second round that I think that was possibly saved in some ways by OG Anunoby and a great pass, obviously, from Kyle Lowry. I thought Fred VanVleet should have gotten an and one from his great drive on the prior play. Kemba Walker breaks down the defense, gets around the double team, finds Daniel Tice for the dunk. A really entertaining end to that Boston-Toronto game. But nice to have Toronto hanging around in that series. If that would have gone to 3-0 Boston, that would have been tough for us NBA fans over these next several days.
Yeah, it would have been interesting what the NBA would have done. That series could have been almost over before the Clippers-Denver were playing game two. So that would have been – that's kind of interesting to see how lucky I think Toronto got. I won't say lucky. I mean, they earned it. But Boston really had the foot on the throat there, and that's going to be a missed opportunity that I think as good as Boston's playing, it could end up costing them a chance to potentially go to the finals this year. So that was just unlucky for Boston. But I think that's the difference between championship teams and not championship teams. I think a championship team would have closed that game out.
Yeah, absolutely. And Boston, Toronto, Miami, and Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot to like about every single one of those teams, but it's like, I don't know. It just seems like unless Milwaukee turns it back on and becomes the team that we're accustomed to, or maybe we expected in the throughout the regular season, but it's like, are any of those teams to you, like, do any of those teams stand out to you as being like, I could see Larry O'Brien, like I could see this team winning the championship this year? I think that the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals kind of, not that I'm writing off the whole second round and saying that it's LA versus LA, certainly in the Western Conference Finals. And there's a whole different, matchups that could happen in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think this could be an interesting second round in the East still. But is there like a team in the East that you feel really good about going in the NBA Finals that they could win that series?
Miami's 6-0 right now, and that mm-hmm. team's clicking on all cylinders. I think in that series right now, what you have is, it's pretty simple. Jimmy Butler is outplaying Giannis, mm-hmm. and out of the next five best players in that series, besides Brook Lopez, the other four are all Miami Heat players. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're just getting solid performances from everybody that, so far from watching the playoffs this year, that team is just executing their roles and seem to know their roles better than any other team in basketball playing right now. So I think if that continues, they could be a really dangerous matchup for just about anybody.
Now, I know that the discussion that we've kind of had personally between me and you and kind of collectively as the Pistons fan base here over these last, well, really these last 10, 15 years since the 04 championship, is that you need to get that superstar, right? You need to find that Giannis. You need to find your version of that. But it's like the Miami Heat playing so well and just a bunch of dudes. And I know that Jimmy Butler is one of the 10 best players, one of the maybe 12 best players in the NBA. And so he's no slouch. I'm not saying that this is like a workmanlike team and that there isn't a lot of talent in the Miami Heat. This is a Bam Adebayo is an all-star. This is a good team. But is that like some encouragement for the teams like the Pistons who are trying to build something that, you know, maybe we can't find a way to get Kevin Durant in free agency, but maybe we could find a way to build something, set up a program, figure out ways. And I know that South Beach is a little bit different than downtown Detroit in terms of attracting players and being that franchise. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know. We've both been in both places, and it's not exactly the same. But is it a little bit of a blueprint for the Pistons, you think?
Absolutely it can be. And I think it's the kind of the same blueprint the Pistons have followed to win their two championships, mm-hmm. the two different eras of championships, where maybe you don't have a top five or 10 NBA guy. I don't know, Butler's probably right around that 10 mark, somewhere in that ballpark. But, you know, with Isaiah and Joe, you're probably talking about top 15, 10 or 15 players. Just based on MVP voting for those years, if I remember mm-hmm. correctly. So I think the Pistons were kind of the originators of this blueprint of just team basketball and everybody just knowing their roles so much. And it'll come down to coaching. When you're doing a team like that or building a team like that, it really puts the emphasis on the coaching and having that right person. Eric Spoelstra is absolutely the right person. The guy's probably doesn't get the credit he's due as to how good of a job he's done for that franchise over the last, I don't know, how long has he been there?
Yeah, it's been a long time. He was early in the, I think he took over after Stan Van Gundy, right? I mean, that's
yeah,
been
absolutely.
A long
yeah,
time.
Right.
Yeah, so. And think about how long it's been since Stan, how much your life has changed since Stan Van Gundy was the host, the coach of the Miami Heat. But yeah, I mean, obviously extrapolating on Eric Spoelstra as the man one office above, right, is Pat Riley, who kind of just runs the show there. And talk about a guy who's kind of been in the shadows for the past 20 years and was the Showtime coach back in the day, but a guy who we're witnessing his career in real time. You and I have both lived through the whole Pat Riley experience.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But he's like underrated, right? I mean, he's kind of like just run the NBA for many years.
He's won championships all over the place in two eras. Mm-hmm. Where do you – as far as personalities for the NBA and players, coaches, owners, the whole gamut, kind of what are the names that you're mentioning Pat Riley with? It's got to be just the top of the heap, right? Red Auerbach, some of the Phil Jacksons. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the types of names that he's in the conversation with. And you're right, he does it kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it only comes up maybe around free agency time. You always hear his name, obviously. They're usually pretty decent players in that market every year. So, I mean, he's had as much impact on the NBA as just about anybody over the last 40 or 50 years.
And let's build on that. Obviously, what he's built in Miami as the former coach and now the president of that team, and we remember the Magic Lakers, of course, but he also has a hand in the Eastern Conference muck of that the Pistons became the cream of the crop in terms of the physical style of basketball, because he was the coach of the New York Knicks in that time when, you know, pre-Jeff Van Gundy, when they were, you know, went from the Showtime Lakers to that group and Ewing and Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley and all those guys. And that was kind of a precursor to the going to work teams and kind of the heir apparent of the Bad Boys in some ways. So, you know, for all the great things that he did in Miami and LA, I think that's a crucial way that he impacted the NBA in terms of that defensive style, that toughness. So it's not like, you know, he's just sitting on some yacht in the Bay of Biscayne down there in Florida and just being this guy who's the godfather of the NBA and recruiting LeBron James and Chris Bosh. He's also an X's and O guy. He's also was a former, you know, obviously this is well before my time, but was a hard-nosed former player. Was involved. They played in the 72 Olympics team that got screwed over by the Russians there. And it's just a guy that has his hands in like everything important about basketball over the past 50, 60 years. So an unbelievable, and played for Kentucky. They played in the ABA as well, I believe. So I mean, we're going to look, like, you know, not to be morbid, but like, we're going to look back on his life someday and just be like, this guy touched everything for the past several decades.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a great point with he was kind of the precursor to a lot of things, right? He was very forward thinking in moving the NBA or at least recognizing the trends in the NBA from the, you know, building the Showtime Lakers the way they were built out there. Then, like you said, going to the Knicks and do it with a more hard-nosed style to kind of supplement some of the other teams in the league. And then down in Miami kind of was – if not the first, I mean, Boston obviously collected Pierce, Garnett, and Allen previous to the guy showing up in South Beach, but he perfected that, I guess, right? I mean, that was the beginning of what basketball has become now with these mega talents all teaming up to each other. So you're right. He always was the perfect amount of time ahead of where the NBA curve was going to find success. We found success in New York. How tough has that proven to be over the last three or four decades? So, I think that he's pretty close to whatever Mount Rushmore basketball you're building. He's in the conversation to be on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we could probably do a whole show on Mount Rushmore of basketball. But like you said, in our lifetimes, certainly at the top, he's got to be on that Mount Rushmore, by the way. We'll throw it. Maybe we'll do a whole show on that going forward. But we'll tie it back to the Pistons. I know draft talk is a big thing. So obviously we'll do the week in Pistons draft rumors here. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. But hey, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Finally showed up. It started me with the mornings. I am a new man, back to the old man once again. But they got the six new flavors. You got to check them out. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. I'm like you guys. I try to show a little bit of restraint in things like this. Don't want to eat them all, but I'm slowly but surely getting through these boxes. Add them to the 12 original flavors as well. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. You need these. These are things that are going to help your life and get you through all these days, but also make you healthy as well. Built Bar is great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain the weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for the keto diet as well. And Built Bar has reset the promo card for the promo code for this relaunch as well. You get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last, but also go to builtbar.com and use promo code locked on and you'll get $10 off your next order. Use promo code locked on for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right. And it wouldn't be a Pistons podcast if we didn't talk about the draft a little bit here. And Brian kind of gave his plea for Killian Hayes and Kira Lewis last week, but a little bit of developments this week, something we haven't talked about yet on the podcast, is Sam Vecenie of The Athletic, who's kind of my, I would say, go-to guy for the NBA draft these days. And I'm sure there's other great analysts out there with the draft, but Sam Vecenie of The Athletic kind of seems to be the most plugged-in guy, the guy who spends the most time throughout the year doing this stuff. So I kind of take his not only player evaluations, but also where he feels like prospects could go in the draft as the biggest one, and not to step on the toes of The Athletic, who obviously is a paid website. So we respect that, but we also want to give our listeners a little bit extra here. So right now, his latest mock draft, which is 7.1 version of his, tweaked a little bit from 7.0 from after the lottery. He's got the Timberwolves taking LaMelo Ball. He's got the Golden State Warriors taking Anthony Edwards. He has the Charlotte Hornets at number three taking James Wiseman. Number four with the Chicago Bulls taking Denny Avdija. Number five with the Cavs taking Obi Toppin. And number six with the Hawks taking Tyrese Haliburton. Now, before I reveal the Pistons pick, that to me is like maybe the most like vanilla and most realistic top six with the Pistons. Now, I just feel like with the Pistons sitting at seven, that Ball, Wiseman, and Edwards are like almost certainly off the board, with Wiseman being the less certain of that group being off the board. And I also feel like Avdija between the Bulls and the Cavs and the Hawks is probably going to be off the board at seven as well. So I feel pretty confident as making the preparations for the Pistons that Edwards, Ball, Wiseman, and Avdija are off the board. Between guys like Tyrese Haliburton and Obi Toppin, maybe that's a little bit of an open question with if those guys will be off the board at seven. But long story short, the Pistons at number seven take Isaac Okoro from Auburn. This is a mixed emotions pick for me as a longtime Pistons fan and observer of this team, because you love the defense, right? You love the fact that this guy is in the foxhole. You love the fact that this guy is probably the best defensive prospect in the draft right now. But we're also watching these games and seeing how offense is king in the NBA right now. And he's a 28% three-point shooter in college. You're having like crazy flashbacks of Stanley Johnson and a guy who's like everything athletically that you want, who just can't fill it up from long range. And then, as we talked about earlier in this week, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, another guy that we really appreciate and value his draft prospects and his draft analysis, had LaMelo Ball falling to number 7 to the Detroit Pistons. So really kind of a topsy-turvy week if you're following the mock drafts with the Pistons at number 7.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still sticking by my guns, and I like if Killian Hayes is available there, that's the guy you take. I think point guard is the position of value in this draft. I think you need to find somebody, like you said, who can score. Having a player who isn't a threat to score really puts you at such a disadvantage in today's NBA that I really think that you need somebody who's going to get points for you right now.
Yeah, interesting, and certainly I agree with you. But also looking back on Troy Weaver, looking at Darius Bazley, who was a young, talented guy who wasn't necessarily a knockdown shooter in draft evaluations, and we saw what he did in Game 7. He played pretty well for Oklahoma City there. Lou Dort is another guy who's got strides to make in terms of being an off-the-ball knockdown shooter, and we saw him drop 30 in Game 7 against the Houston Rockets. And Terrence Ferguson is another guy who has athleticism and was a wing and was a late first-round pick for Oklahoma City. So I think Isaac Okoro kind of fits the mold of some of the guys that Troy Weaver picked in Oklahoma City. I'm not crazy about this. I'd rather have a guy who's more of a scorer, more than a 28% shooter. If you listen to this podcast, you know that I love old school DNA. I love the fact that Isaac Okoro is as advertised as a defensive player, as a defensive plus prospect. And I get it. Like, I certainly understand why Isaac Okoro might end up in the red, white, and blue for the Pistons. But I do agree with Brian in that you need a point guard. You need a guy who can be dynamic. You need a guy who can make those things happen. And if, I don't know, because there's a lot of conflicting thoughts with the draft, because this is what happens when you analyze a thing for 6-7 months, and there's all sorts of pretty good prospects, and none of them kind of blow your socks off. But to me, I think the biggest takeaway from these past couple weeks and this past month or so of thinking about what Troy Weaver might do is that I think I'm going to walk away from draft night feeling confident that Troy Weaver did the due diligence and did what he thinks is right in terms of building these Pistons for the long haul.
Well, let me ask you this. The other day I ran across on Instagram a post that had said that the Detroit Pistons executives were reportedly high on one Cole Anthony, mm-hmm. and that was actually liked by newly hired scout Ryan West. Do you put any stock into stuff like that, or is that some kind of subversive technique to get other teams off your scent?
I'd like to think that this is kind of the silly season with the NBA, right? And that you kind of everything like that in terms of what guys like on social media, what they're presenting as far as the public, is all things that are hopefully just stealth ways of throwing people off the scent. That's not to say that there's no chance that Cole Anthony ends up as the pick for the Pistons at number 7. And again, I'm not really a Cole Anthony guy, but there's not a lot of prospects in the draft at number 7 that are possibilities for the Pistons to take that would make me throw something at the TV at number 7. Like, I just feel like Troy Weaver has to kind of get that leash and just kind of have that leeway to make the pick that he feels fit to make. And I don't know. I can't really – maybe Anthony Edwards falling at number 7. If you don't take him, that would be strange. Obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you know I'm really high on Onyeka Okongwu. And with Vecini's draft, by the way, that's taking Okoro – with Killian Hayes still on the board and Onyeka Okongwu still on the board as well. Devin Vassell is a guy that a lot of Pistons fans like as well. So, you know, there are some possible swings and misses that they take at number 7 there. But to me, you're going to have to kind of put your trust in Troy Weaver and say that whatever he likes at number 7, you got to kind of roll with the punches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got the track record is, I mean, that's the main reason we hired him, was his ability to evaluate talent. So I think he gets a pass this first year, this first draft, from any aggressive grading until we can see what he sees and whomever he ends up selecting with number 7 pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. And so tonight we've got the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat That's game three. The Miami Heat up 2-0. I think that's like kind of the game of the weekend. The first weekend, 6:30 on TNT. As far as, you know, must win, obviously at this point for the Bucks.
How big could this game be for these two franchises? I mean, if they're able to go up 3-0 and essentially eliminate Milwaukee, you might see Giannis making his way down to South Beach at some point. You were talking about Chris Paul going to Milwaukee. I mean, this is the type of game that could really dictate the direction that these two franchises take over the next couple of years, even if that's not too hyperbolic to put on.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that Giannis and that decision, he's under contract next year. But yeah, like you said, keeping Giannis in Milwaukee long term is the big thing. And I know it's a little bit of an old bit. Everyone talks about it. But yeah, it's obviously important and obviously the biggest story in the NBA for the next 2-3 years of LeBron, you know, solidifying his legacy and possibly winning another championship or so is right up there too. But what Giannis does in these next couple of years is going to be the biggest story when we look back to 2020 and 2021 and 2022. And tonight's game against the Miami Heat, down 2-0 in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, is going to be a big part of that in some ways, which is kind of weird to think, but we're witnessing history. And then game one, Houston and the Lakers, 9:00 on ESPN. Saturday, it's all night games. The two games are going to be at night, 6:30 and 9:00, with Toronto and Boston, new life into that series. And then the Denver Nuggets trying to respond to the beatdown that they took expectedly in game one. Sunday, we got Milwaukee and Miami. Game four is going to be a 3:30 game afternoon on ESPN. I'm sorry, on ABC, and then a night game. So a little bit of a gap between those two games, Houston and the Lakers on 8:30 prime time on ABC, and it's the holiday weekend, which is nice. So before we talk to you guys next, all sorts of, you know, who knows what the NBA will be like 4 days from now when we come back to you guys on a Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. So much can change this weekend or continue the way it's going in the Miami-Milwaukee situation or the series. So it's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to that Houston Lakers series. See Harden and Davis. I'm sorry, LeBron and Anthony Davis versus Harden and Russ. These are four guys that I don't think I've ever seen share a basketball court since James Harden was in OKC in the finals against Miami with LeBron. So I think it's what I like about the Western Conference here is we're seeing some matchups we haven't seen, and I think it's kind of refreshing about this year's playoffs.
Yeah, legacies are in the balance, and I think the conventional wisdom right now is that Houston might get rolled because they didn't really look very good in the first round. For James Harden and Russell Westbrook to put up a good fight or even possibly upset the Lakers would, you know, change their legacies in some way. So, like I said, Giannis's legacy and future, Jimmy Butler trying to put himself into the discussion for one of this era's best players, bar none. Really a lot going on this weekend. And most of all, enjoy your time. You know, Labor Day weekend, hopefully you guys got a little bit of time off from the day-to-day grind. Spend time with your family, maybe your friends. Fantasy football drafts going on this weekend too. So, I don't know. I had a long week, and hopefully, like you guys, we're looking forward to a nice weekend here. And we made it. So it's Friday, and that's why we have Brian on to signal the Fridays with Brian to get you excited for the weekend. And I think we did that here today. But that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. I am your host, Matt Shook. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys after the long weekend.